It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here as we talk with leaders of free and charitable health clinics that are set to converge on the State Capitol tomorrow for an advocacy day. We learn about their most pressing health policy issues and what they want to impart on lawmakers. Call in with questions and comments about Safety Net Healthcare, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ian Hedges is CEO of Health Net of Rock County, which runs its clinic in Janesville. Ian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me again.
Good morning. And Mary Beth Woodford is here, Executive Director of the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic in Eau Claire. Mary Beth, welcome.
Thank you, Kate. Welcome.
Let's start with you, Mary Beth, as we look specifically at what Governor Evers has proposed in his two-year budget. It would raise state funding for free and charitable clinics by $1 million over 2 years. What would you spend money on that would come from that spending line?
Well, as our listening audience may be aware, we are privately funded in our communities. So what that means is we ask for communities to help fund the free clinics, and what we receive is how we can treat our patients. So we would welcome state funding to continue purchasing medications, providing basic health care, chronic disease treatment. And as our numbers and patients grow, we need additional funding to keep servicing those patients.
Can we just level set for a moment? What is your state support like at present?
We are currently receiving from the Department of Health $75,000 annually in a $500,000 budget that we oversee in our area.
Okay. Ian Hedges, what do you make of the governor's plan for $1 million over 2 years?
I would say that it's incredibly necessary right now. There are two reasons why it's being discussed this legislative session. The first is that there's going to be opposition to any Medicaid expansion with the numbers in the Assembly and the Senate. It's just not going to be considered. And so I think that there is a desire among both parties to help those who are low income to get to there's a desire to help them while we are still trying to get many uninsured the care that they need. And free and charitable clinics are a middle ground solution that work for both parties. Supporting free and charitable clinics increase access to care, but they do not receive a ton of federal funding because their primary sources of income are philanthropy and volunteerism. I would say that the other reason why this is critical for clinics like mine is because many individuals that are covered under Medicaid with the public health emergency are going to lose coverage after May 1st. And we're probably talking tens of thousands of people in Wisconsin are going to lose that kind of healthcare coverage. So presumably some of those people will not qualify for Medicaid anymore because they're back to work making money. But many of those individuals are still working lower wage jobs like in the hospitality industry, in which health insurance is not always going to be provided. So free and charitable clinics are a viable option for them, but they do. But state funding is definitely needed in order to increase that capacity.
So digging into that a bit, so at the start of the pandemic, the federal government prohibited states from kicking people off Medicaid if they were no longer eligible, and that ban is ending this spring. And so what you're seeing is the Medicaid redetermination process is underway. How much of an impact would that have on your patients?
I mean, I think we'll just be seeing more patients in our doors, coming into our doors, because I think that the state of the economy right now and where we are has not certainly helped many people get more health insurance. And so I think, again, as there's been a resurgence of hospitality service industry, they definitely are looking for a viable care option. I'm seeing it kind of in our patient numbers. We are enrolling patients every week, and we have enrollment appointments, and we're booked out solid for the next month and a half to enroll new patients.
talking about priorities for free and charitable clinics. Ian Hedges there, CEO of HealthNet of Rock County. We have Mary Beth Woodford here as well, Executive Director of the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic. You can join in the conversation at any point about free and charitable medical care, primary care, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mary Beth, a follow-up there on what Ian is talking about in a state like Wisconsin that hasn't taken Medicaid expansion, how does a clinic like yours function differently than in states that have taken Medicaid expansion?
Well, free clinics look for healthcare gaps in their communities, and that is what we look to service. So when someone over the 100% federal poverty level is not able to access insurance by any other means, we're there to provide care for them. And that number is growing. And like Ian said, the public health emergency is going to be ending, and Medicaid to many of patients who had left us and received that care will be coming back. So the issue of not being able to afford insurance and not being eligible for the Medicaid program, Badger Care in Wisconsin, will be an increasing number of patients that we will see.
I want to go back to something you said earlier in terms of your local philanthropic support is the lifeblood of your clinic. How much fundraising do you need to do in order to keep your doors open? How much local fundraising are you focused on?
It's a constant request because annually we do need to fund our clinic. So we are living in a community or an area that is very generous to our community clinic. They see the need for it, but it is a continuous program to fundraise because we do need to, every year, we do need to apply for grants and family trusts and foundations in the area, private individuals, donations, businesses, and our healthcare systems as well help fund us.
Let's bring in Jeff in Delafield. Jeff, hi. What is your question?
Yes, my question is, how can we as citizens get involved and make donations? And I guess the second part of that question is, are there similar organizations in Southeast Wisconsin?
Ian Hedges, can you field that?
Yes, I would encourage you to look at the Wisconsin Association of Free and Charitable Clinic website. They have a list of all the clinics, including a map. There are more than 99 free and charitable clinics in the state of Wisconsin. And that number is growing as more communities are wanting to invest in those clinics. I think donating is the hugest amount of thing that you can do for us. Again, my philanthropic support just privately in the community is over $1 million, and we have to raise that every single year in order to keep our doors open. I think another way too is, you don't have to be a healthcare professional to help us. We love healthcare professionals to come through our doors to provide services for our patients. But we utilize volunteers in so many other different ways to help us. That includes, unpacking boxes, helping us with storage, helping us clean out and recycle used pill bottles so that we can reuse them for our prescriptions. So contacting your clinic and being insistent that you can help out in some way, I think it is just very critical because we don't know that we need the help until it becomes available to us.
Jeff, thank you for that call. Along those lines, Ian, Wisconsin facing near record low unemployment levels, charitable clinics relying, as you mentioned there, on volunteer clinicians and for other services as well. How is the labor shortage affecting staffing at your clinic?
It has been affecting us quite a bit, especially you can imagine that the pandemic certainly took a different toll on the employment numbers for healthcare and how to staff a healthcare institution. We are not the richest, nor we are the most robust institutions that have tons of money to offer incentive to providers. And so we have to utilize and develop creative ways to ensure that we can bring providers into our free and charitable clinics. Mine happens to be one of the larger ones in the state of Wisconsin, so that does give me a little bit of wiggle room. But nonetheless, you know, I'm in a suburban area of Janesville, Wisconsin, and we're trying to recruit healthcare providers while we're in the middle of a triangle of Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago, which are certainly popular places for healthcare providers to go. We're always kind of having those battles and competing, but we are right now mostly fully staffed, and we have our high level providers such as dentists, a mental health therapist, and a psych nurse practitioner on our staff, because they truly understand our mission and want to help our patients.
Mary Beth Woodford, what is the impact of staffing at your clinic?
Very similar. And another area where the shortage grew is many during COVID that were retired have decided not to come back in certain areas to volunteer. So we were impacted by the healthcare systems being stretched then, and our retirees not necessarily wanting to get back into the healthcare systems to volunteer. So our shortage remains. And we are looking at a similar model where we may have to bring on a paid staff person, an additional one in the medical field and in the dental field to provide consistent care.
Mary Beth Woodford, Executive Director of Chippewa Valley Free Clinic for residents in Eau Claire. Ian Hedges here leads HealthNet of Rock County, providing critical medical care for residents in need with a clinic in Janesville. Join in with your questions and experiences with free or low-cost health clinics, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Free and charitable clinics, they hold their advocacy day at the State Capitol tomorrow. We learn about the pressing issues of safety net health clinics. Call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ian Hedges, a CEO of HealthNet of Rock County, has its clinic in Janesville. And Mary Beth Woodford is here, Executive Director of the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, the safety net clinic in Eau Claire. Mary Beth, a bipartisan group of state lawmakers, they're circulating this bill that would expand postpartum Medicaid coverage for mothers up to a full year after pregnancy. What is your take? Do you support the extension?
Yes, most definitely we do support the extension. The more consistent care, the better for the patient, better for the family.
Ian Hedges, what is your take on this particular piece of Medicaid expansion and what the impact would be as you see it?
I think the wonderful part of this legislation is that it seems to be picking up a great deal of bipartisan support, which is rare, but it will have a tremendous impact on many new mothers in Wisconsin. One of the more pronounced effects, obviously, that's going to happen is we're going to move from having postpartum coverage to 90 days to a full year. And that is certainly going to, and we've seen that this occurs in the 31 other states that this has been implemented, that it reduces racial disparities in maternal health. And it definitely facilitates better prevention and treatment for conditions that are caused by pregnancy complications, such as diabetes and cardiovascular disease. I think that one of the more pressing effects that I know is going to affect my clinic a lot more, because we do have a behavioral health clinic attached that accepts Medicaid, is that women who are suffering from depression or other mental illnesses during or after pregnancy can have an extended treatment option to treat mental illness. I think that this is critically important because suicidality among pregnant and postpartum women has increased over the last decade. And so it will make it easier for free and charitable clinics like mine to treat patients in my clinic if this extension goes through, or this expansion. If women were to go uninsured and expected to pay a sliding fee scale, even if it's only $20 or $40, you run the risk of women having to forego necessary treatment as to not skimp on expenses for their child, and vice versa.
That's interesting you say that, because Kaiser Family Foundation says Medicaid finances about 4 in 10 births in our country. Mary Beth, from your perspective, what happens to a patient at your clinic when, as a provider, you learn that they are pregnant?
One of the things we do not do, and we're a much, much smaller clinic than the one in Janesville, we don't duplicate services in our area. So we have case managers who work with patients when they're diagnosed with a pregnancy to refer them on to other resources in our community. We're never a closed door to anyone who comes to us, even though we may not have the treatment or the services to help them. We find others in the community and we work with them until they are getting the services that they need.
So, Ian, you had said earlier that Wisconsin probably won't expand Medicaid given the makeup of the legislature, but, you know, would free and charitable clinics be needed in our state and others if our state did take the Medicaid expansion?
Yes, it still would be needed. States who have expanded Medicaid are still seeing free and charitable clinics across the board, because we serve individuals, at least my clinic does, up to 250% of the federal poverty level. The expansion will only cover people up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And many clinics like mine are also hybrid clinics. So our medical care is for those who are only uninsured that would have fit beyond that expansion level up to 250% of the federal poverty level. But we see Medicaid in our medical or in our dental and behavioral health clinics. So either way, we are still going to be seeing those patients. However, it is going to be easier for our patients if they need specialty care or additional services that when you're uninsured, they're harder to find. So I will say that there still will be a need for free and charitable clinics no matter where, especially that's a way that people are able to get out of poverty. I mean, if you need, let's say you're working a fast food kind of service and you're making $13 per hour and you get your teeth fixed, that's the difference of you becoming a customer service agent and making $19 per hour. So we're always going to be needed to help be that economic support and development tool.
Ian Hedges, CEO of HealthNet of Rock County, Mary Beth Woodford here, Executive Director of the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic. I want to turn to your advocacy day tomorrow, advocating through legislation to strengthen free clinics. Mary Beth, you first, what bills are you advocating for? What do you hope to impart on lawmakers tomorrow?
Well, we certainly want the additional funding for free and charitable clinics. We're not a federally qualified clinic, so we need the state to see that we are a necessary entity in our community. We need the funding to provide the services because, as stated, our numbers are growing. We are seeing a large population of our Hispanic, Latino population in our community because they are primarily working in our service industry and farming. We also need to provide support for medications. We're not covered by the 330 bill, so we do not get reduced medication purchases. At times, we have to pay retail costs for them. So we need the expanded support just to continue the services, and also with the growing number of patients that may be coming to us once the Medicaid support starts unwinding.
Ian Hedges, for you, what do you want to advance on Advocacy Day, and what legislation do you really want to push?
Definitely expanding the free and charitable clinic funding. I can't underscore how important it is. Just to show you the value of free and charitable clinics in this healthcare environment, when the COVID-19 vaccine was being rolled out across our county, we weren't receiving the federal dollars that other institutions in our county were receiving. And yet we provided more vaccines than our local federally qualified health center and even one local hospital in our county. So, you know, I think that the value is there for us to serve our communities and be responsive to the community need. I'm also and definitely in favor of the postpartum Medicaid coverage, but the other thing that I'm most in favor of is really looking at increasing reimbursement rates for dental reimbursement rates for individuals with special needs or developmental disabilities. My clinic has actually set up a dental room in our clinic that specifically serves individuals with developmental disabilities. And what we're finding is we're gladly able to take anybody, but we're the only resource in our county that is able to do that, to provide this service. The nearest closest facility that could serve Rock County residents is Children's Hospital Wisconsin, which currently has a waiting list of 4,000 patients.
That is a desert there. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Ian Hedges, CEO of HealthNet of Rock County, Mary Beth Woodford, Executive Director of the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic. This is a State Capitol Report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The legislature's budget writing committee, Joint Finance, holding another public hearing tomorrow in Eau Claire and in coming days in Wisconsin Dells and Minocqua. We hear from a Republican member of that committee and discuss legislative priorities with State Senator Joan Baldwig here of Markazan. Call in at any point to share your questions and comments for a lawmaker, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator Joan Baldwig represents District 14 in central Wisconsin, also chairs the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Tourism. State Senator Baldwig, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Happy to be with you.
Good morning. So let's start with the spending plan Joint Finance is designing. You're a member of the committee, as stated here. What are your priorities in the next state budget?
Well, first of all, doing a responsible state budget. We all know that $7.1 billion surplus sounds really great, but we have to understand that a good share of that money is going to be one-time money. Because of all the money that came into Wisconsin to us as individuals, our schools and our communities, we have quite a bit of extra money that has come to the state because of higher sales taxes, because of inflation, and so many other things that have gone into additional spending. So we figure that we have in the area of the usual $2.5 billion that is money that we need to invest in Wisconsin. The state has a great number of responsibilities when it comes to our employees. We have a crisis in some of our corrections institutions unable to have enough corrections officers, our state hospitals and veterans homes. We have the same pressure as all institutions when it comes to hiring right now, and workforce is an issue. But for the budget itself, from my viewpoint, for the things that I've been doing in agriculture and tourism, we have some wonderful programs that were initiated last term, and I want to build on many of those, like the agricultural exports program that we did in legislation and with last year's budget. I think this is a good time to make some additional investments in the ability to market Wisconsin through our Department of Tourism. And I'm also hoping that we can help generate some more help for folks in the tourism industry by some dedicated folks in the department, a office of meetings and conventions to bring more of that activity into the state. It's the that part of tourism that hasn't rebounded as well as our recreation and leisure part of tourism has, and that's for sure.
I want to get to tourism in just a moment, but looking at the budget, there's been, you know, some concern expressed by your Republican colleagues that the next budget is being pulled in lots of directions. You recognize the word pressure, due to the historic nature of the surplus, $7 billion. Do you feel that tension of it going in a lot of different directions?
Well, absolutely. During COVID, the governor had discretion over a little over $5 billion that came in the way of CARES Act and ARPA dollars. And many of the programs and things that he's putting in the budget is replicating programs that he did during that time period with that additional federal money. We can't continue $5 billion worth of programs. Even though we have the money today, we're not going to have it come the next budget and the budget after that. So the governor had discretion, sole discretion to spend those dollars. But the idea was it was supposed to get us by the problem and get us by the shutdowns and the difficulty on the economic side. This is something that cannot be sustained, and the governor's increase in state spending is 17%. That is that's just not sustainable, and would put us back in deficit, according to the numbers we've received, by the end of 2025. So this is not something that we can just rubber stamp and move on with.
You've been hosting a series of budget listening sessions in your district with your constituents. What issues have been raised by people around you in your district?
Certainly. So I have three more today in Randolph, Lodi, and Portage, and that'll be the altogether there ended up being 10 listening sessions in the 14th Senate district that I initiated or participated in. And it is very similar to a lot of the issues that have come up in the first public hearing that we held in Waukesha with Joint Finance Committee. Folks talking about, the push and pull between funding for public schools, funding for vouchers and the choice schools. But in my district, we have been very traditionally conservative. So we have a lot of schools that are at the minimum when it comes to students' revenue per students. So raising some of those low spending limits, I think, is something that I'm going to be advocating for to help us in our more conservative school districts have a little more leeway when it comes to funding our schools.
So the governor's budget sets aside $2.6 billion for public education. So you could say public education being a very much a top priority in the governor's budget. Do you see it that way? Is that responsible to you?
Well, it always has been a very top priority. But remember, we said we had $7.1 billion surplus. The governor is saying 2.6 altogether, so that leaves nothing else for anything else. So in the last several budgets, not the last one, because schools had so much money, federal money in and ESSER funds, we did maintain the required maintenance of effort when it came to education, put money into special education, which is always been the number one thing that I've heard from school administrators around the state, and we hear that every day. So that's another area that we'll definitely be taking a look at. Will we be able to raise some categorical aid for per student? Hopefully we'll be able to put that in too. But this year we have heard much more regarding shared revenue for our municipalities and our counties. So I think this is a year that we're going to be able to make an additional investment maybe a little bit of a catch up for that shared revenue levels that we haven't changed over a number of years. Also, a new mechanism that has been accepted by both the legislature and the governor that would tie our sales tax revenue, which naturally increases every year, I think, except for one in the last 20, that there'd be a little bit of a natural increase in money going out to our communities. The problem is, again, the formula in doing that many of our small communities, our towns, our small villages and cities are not, don't seem to be treated equitably in that formula. So that is something that is concerning for my district. I mean, my largest community is Portage, which is a little over 10,000 people. So that's why the geography of my district in south central Wisconsin is pretty large, because I have all these small communities and towns.
Talking with Republican State Senator Joan Baldwin about her budget priorities, also learning more about her latest bills of the legislative session. You can join in the conversation at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator, let's turn back to your tourism bill. The State Senate recently passing the bill, and it changes the duties of the tourism department. What changes are you proposing here?
Well, this is interesting. People talk about, you know, what is the some state statutes that are no longer reasonable. And this was a bill we did last year, and hopefully we'll get it through this year. And it's endorsed by the Department of Tourism. Department of Tourism no longer is in charge of all those welcome centers around the state. And originally, they were told that they were supposed to have cheese at all the welcome centers, which doesn't happen, of course. Should we have celebrities? The law says we should have Wisconsin celebrities and all the advertising. Well, we all know how cute the Donald Driver commercials were, and the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar reprising Airplane. But the Department of Tourism should be doing their marketing based on what they see is going to bring people to Wisconsin. So a couple of those things we're saying we don't need to have them. Also reporting by the Department of Tourism, so they report to the correct legislative standing committees.
And I want to pause right there to understand that more. Specifically, they report to the Natural Resources and the Assembly Committee on Tourism. What would be the appropriate standing committees?
Well, the way we're suggesting to change the law, that it would be the committee in the Senate that was the appropriate standing committee. So not every term would you have a committee that is tourism, but the one who is acknowledged as that. So this particular term and last term, my committee assignment was agriculture and tourism. So it would make sense that that's who the secretary would be sharing their report to, and that is why our committee is more interested in those activities and better way to understand what they're looking for in their portion of the budget and how that's being used.
I'm going to pause right there with Republican State Senator Joan Baldwin here of Markazan on policy and budget priorities. Call in at any point to explore the questions and ideas you have for a state lawmaker, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with Republican State Senator Joan Balwig of Markazan in the central part of our state, has a seat on the legislature's powerful 16-member Budget Writing Committee Joint Finance. Join in with your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. Mike in Franklin is here. Mike, what would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I was very glad to hear about the representative's plan for adding more dollars for education. But I'd like to take it in a little bit different direction. We have been hearing about how the state of Wisconsin can play a really big role in the creation of electric vehicles. I have heard other programs where communities around the country have invested in training individuals to be able to do things like install broadband, things like that. So I'm thinking that with the dollars that we have, education is always a great investment. What types of things can we do, especially in those communities that maybe are having issues with jobs and things, where now we can train individuals at those community colleges that support those communities to be able to do the type of work that is going to help grow Wisconsin business again.
Mike, thank you for that. State Senator Joan Balwig.
Well, our number one issue right now is workforce itself. It's not the training, and it's not the particular type of work. The governor does have something in the budget that it goes along that line. But folks that I come into contact with when they talk about workforce, I tell them that, well, first we need to concentrate also not on training as much as trying to find support for our child care efforts in Wisconsin. We still have large numbers of folks that have not come back into the workforce since COVID, and that is exacerbated by not being able to find qualified slots for our daycare and early childhood education. So I think that is a key piece, even higher than training nowadays.
So how would that translate into the next two-year budget in your vision, childcare?
Well, that is one of the items that the governor has included in the budget that he used a large amount of his ARPA dollars in trying to support. And I think one of the things we need to do is get many businesses are involved, but we need to have business involved also. Businesses generally, just like the gentleman was talking about, will invest in people to have training. But I think they also need to think about investing in their people to get them a better balance, ability to actually come to work. I was at a program in my part of the world with Envision, which is basically the Fond du Lac Chamber of Commerce. And their claim is that if they had adequate child care, there'd be 500 more people in the workforce in southern Fond du Lac County. Now, I think if you multiply that around the state, I think that is a major part of the issue. The governor, through his ARPA dollars, did make expenditures to our child care facilities, so they could do more bonuses, raise wages. That is definitely something that the governor is asking for in the next budget. Whether we can put another $300 million into that program, as I said before, we have to do something that is sustainable also. So we need more partners than only state government to help get at this issue.
Republican State Senator Joan Ballwig with us, member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. You can join in 800-642-1234. I want to turn now to something very close to you, that is agriculture. And you've mentioned here your priorities in the past have been, you know, egg export plan and addressing nitrate contamination by, you know, really trying to boost those grants for watershed and county conservation grants. What are your priorities for this budget in agriculture?
Well, I think generally speaking, in our rural areas, I would like to see support for well testing and some of those kinds of issues. We know that we're getting to higher testing levels when it comes to our municipal water supplies. But some of the things that we've heard about before, we have emerging issues. It's not just the nitrates or E. coli contamination now that we have to be worried about. We have to also make sure that we know where PFAS is in our water supplies and water systems. There are ways to filter those kinds of things out of our water, but I think that is something that we need to keep working at in our rural economy. Some of the things that are going to help on the ground our farmers have to do with doing a little bit more when it comes to farmland preservation, continue to support the farmer producer led watershed groups. There's a bill now that has come out that will be the subject of an executive a paper ballot today in my committee that hopefully will move something along that will help that particular area. So,
and I just want to jump in here. Governor Evers wants to spend $500,000 to support the producer-led watershed protection grant program. Do you support that measure in the budget?
What we're doing in the budget, of course, is the same thing that Joint Finance has done for many, many years, and that is take out the policy items. So I think the best way to look at these types of policy changes are through the legislative process, and that's what is happening now in all our committees. So we pass this through the budget. The governor will be able to sign that that initiative then. And so that is a way to highlight all of these particular issues rather than putting them in the budget. It's important, I think, for the public and those who are both pro and con any of these issues to be able to fully have them discussed in the legislature.
State Senator Ballwig, thank you for joining us.
Anytime. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too, State Senator Joan Ballwig of Markazan, a Republican representing Green Lake and Marquette counties, most of Columbia and Waupaca counties. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.